The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Humbling when we hear of all the wonderful things our residents volunteer to do each year. Bedford is truly a better place to live in because of the people who serve their fellow residents, and I wish to thank the committee for and the sponsors for recognizing them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Barring no more member statements, the House will recess until 2 p.m. We'll resume with question period. Order, please. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Yesterday, we were all alarmed to hear that the front counter staff at the Amherst Justice Centre were sent to the hospital suffering from nausea, dizziness, and burning throats after the arrival of a suspicious package. Today, we've learned that courthouses in Kentville, Truro, Bridgewater and the law courts here in Halifax have also been closed after receiving similar packages. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Premier, what steps is the government taking to ensure the safety of Nova Scotians who work in our provincial courthouses?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to thank all those Nova Scotians who work in our courthouses and delivering and making sure that keep our community safe. In this instance, which is troubling, Mr. Speaker, we're seeing some other events today, is in the capable hands of law enforcement agencies in those respective communities, Mr. Speaker, and they are moving forward to ensure that the men and women who work in those facilities are safe and to ensure that we get to the bottom of what's taking place.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All Nova Scotians are worried today about the arrival of multiple packages at multiple courthouses. Sadly, this follows a similar incident in Manitoba less than a month ago. Mr. Speaker, a police bulletin went out from Manitoba to all the courthouses of the country to make them aware at that time. I'd like to ask the Premier, what steps did the government take to ensure the safety of our courthouses after the bulletin came from Manitoba?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I will refer that to the Minister of Justice.
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you so much for that very important question. Indeed, safety of all our staff and all our public is our priority in our courthouses. When we were alerted about a month ago that a suspicious package was delivered in Manitoba, we informed all our courthouses in the province here. Again, this was a month ago. That package in Manitoba was investigated, and we learned that there was no toxins available, substances in that. We received a package of similar, similar-looking package yesterday in Amherst. We've advised our police, and they are investigating that. And again, packages were received today in other courthouses. And at this point, we are taking the lead from our police partners, and they're investigating those packages.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, Nova Scotians are alarmed at the situation where multiple courthouses have now received suspicious packages. Our thoughts, of course, are first and foremost with the people that work in those courthouses, Mr. Speaker, but it's now an issue that has caused concern for not only users of the courthouses, but all Nova Scotians who want to know they're safe. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Premier, what message does his government have for Nova Scotians who are worried about what's going on in our courthouses?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to reassure all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, that the steps and protocols that have been in place have worked well when it's come to these suspicious packages. And I want to reassure all of them, Mr. Speaker, that our communities across this province are safe from the men and women in uniform who serve day in and day out, night and day, to protect us, Mr. Speaker, at every step, and this instance will be no different.
Now I'm a leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, today in law amendments, Nova Scotians are again voicing their concerns about the McNeill government's changes to the film tax credit. In fact, Bill Nevin, a renowned producer of Northeast Films, the company that produced The Book of Negroes here in our province, says he's already lost a major project and that the current changes to the credit will, quote, kill our screen industry. So, Mr. Speaker, he's calling on the government to put all changes on hold until a full economic impact assessment can be done. So my question to the Premier is this. Why does he continue to move forward with change that could damage a vital industry with serious consequences for our province?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Again, I want to thank Screen Nova Scotia for working with our government to find what was a common ground, a solution that would work for taxpayers as well as work for the industry. We're looking forward to the new program being rolled out next year, Mr. Speaker, as all members of this House would know, in this current budget, there's $24 million there. The industry will operate on the same rules they operated under last year. And we're looking forward to broadening the benefit, Mr. Speaker, that once stood at 50 to 65% of labour cost. I think even industry knew that was too much. We now have a credit that is 25% and is spread out across more opportunities. So all the Nova Scotia spend, Mr. Speaker, will be recognised. We believe that's the right thing for the industry and as well for taxpayers.
I'm a leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, while the McNeill government has failed to analyze the impact of these changes for Nova Scotia, other provinces apparently have not. Manitoba recently strengthened and extended its film tax credit, making it the most attractive place in Canada. And according to a May 2nd Winnipeg Free Press publication, that province is expecting a very busy year because Nova Scotia, in fact, has rescinded its credit. So my question to the Premier is this. Why has he placed Nova Scotia at a competitive disadvantage to other provinces such as Manitoba when it comes to attracting jobs and investment in this important industry?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I would suggest to you and to all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, $10 million is not something to be seized at. This is a competitive fund, Mr. Speaker. We're seeing changes across all provincial jurisdictions. And unlike the leader of the Democratic Party, Mr. Speaker, people come here for more than just having governments throw money at them, Mr. Speaker. If that's all it ever attracted, Mr. Speaker, if throwing money at a company is what brings them to this province, we would be booming at the exercise that party did in the last 4 years.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that's a great insult to the Indigenous filmmaking industry in this province that's at risk now, Mr. Speaker, because of the recklessness of that Premier, that Finance Minister, and that government, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's clear from the presentations and law amendments today that no deal was ever reached with the film industry. The government has imposed a half-baked plan that nobody has confidence in and leaving 2,700 Nova Scotians and their families on tenterhooks, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier is, why won't the Premier even consider suspending the July 1st deadline that he has imposed without consultation, without information and without consideration
the Honourable
on this
Premier.
Industry.
Mr. Speaker, we had a tax credit that was at 50 to 65 cents on the dollar, Mr. Speaker. Even the industry knew, Mr. Speaker, that was too generous. The fact of the matter is we provided and worked with, in consultation with Screen Nova Scotia, to provide what we believe is a fair program, one that will be fair to the industry and one that is fair to taxpayers. The benefit will be more than just labour, Mr. Speaker. We'll be able to look at hotels that are rented in this province, Mr. Speaker, buys that's taken place on Nova Scotia goods and products. Why would the leader of the Democratic Party be opposed to the fact that when we spend precious public money, that we get as much benefit across the spectrum as we possibly can for all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker? We're hearing for people to move forward. And, Mr. Speaker, July 1st is the deadline when we will have approved all of the applications that will fall under the $24 million deal that is in place today, and we'll go forward in a new direction.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Last week, we learned that a respected and outspoken gynecologist felt that a member of the Minister's staff made a clumsy attempt at intimidating her. I was dismissed at the time, even laughed off. Today, in the media scrum, we heard that the minister has not addressed it yet. So my question to the minister is, what will the minister do to get to the bottom of this uncomfortable situation?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. What I can convey to him is that my EA in no way attempted any intimidation or any comment. That's not even his nature. What he does is keep a file on current articles from newspapers all over Nova Scotia.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In a text exchange between Dr. Robin McQuarrie and the Minister's EA, the physician was accused of either being dishonest or being spokesperson for other dishonest physicians. At a time when several OBGYNs are retiring, Mr. Speaker, leaving or threatening to leave the province, this attitude towards them will not make them feel valued or wanted. I can tell you it's no laughing matter. Will the minister explain what action he will be taking in his office to repair relations with the province's OBGYNs?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I've spoken with the head of the obstetrician gynecologist for the province. They realize that we're in a difficult time with the master agreement currently going on. What I can tell the member opposite, as I said last Friday, I'm prepared to meet with Dr. McQuarrie or any doctor in Nova Scotia. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Carl Charlebois is Executive Director of Metro Nonprofit Housing Association, and she told CBC this morning that the Minister of Community Services' decision to cut the bus passes to people who had been receiving them for years is leading to a lot of people becoming kinds of prisoners in their own homes. Mr. Speaker, last week we heard from Nova Scotians on social assistance who live with cerebral palsy, schizophrenia, other medical conditions, who've lost their bus passes. So my question to the Premier, now that these folks are only receiving a few bus tickets for medical appointments only, does the Premier agree with the Minister's decision to take away bus passes from the most vulnerable Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to inform all members of the House, Mr. Speaker, there has been no policy change made by this government, Mr. Speaker. The policy that is being used today goes back to 2001, Mr. Speaker. That government had an opportunity to change that policy. They did not. And what's happening, Mr. Speaker, I'm assuming, is that the caseworker and the client, Mr. Speaker, are, as which goes on across this province, each and every day, caseworkers talk to the clients about their needs that they require, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much. And, Mr. Speaker, I'm proud of the fact that we didn't take away bus passes from people with disabilities and with mental health disorders on income assistance. Mr. Speaker, not long ago, the minister cited departmental policy as the reason they were suing Joellen Huntley's family. So, Mr. Speaker, we're beginning to see a pattern here, a pattern of a government that's going after the most vulnerable people in order to balance the budget and hiding behind arcade policy in the department. So my question to the Premier is this. Why has his government decided to clamp down on government policy, no matter if it hurts the most vulnerable people or not?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the question by the leader of the Democratic Party couldn't be more ridiculous, Mr. Speaker. She tried to make it that way. The reality is, Mr. Speaker, the fact of the matter is we've made no changes. We've made no changes, Mr. Speaker. Caseworkers are working with their clients. Is the leader of the New Democratic Party suggesting that the Premier should get involved and be involved in every one of those cases, Mr. Speaker, and to divide between the relationship between the highly professional men and women that work in frontline services for the most vulnerable citizens of our province, Mr. Speaker? Is that what she's suggesting? Is she suggesting, Mr. Speaker, that every time it should become a political football, that she can come in this house, Mr. Speaker, and Mr. Speaker, work against those hard-working Nova Scotians who are out there working on behalf of all of us from one community to the other? And one other thing we didn't do, Mr. Speaker, we didn't mess around with the amount of payments in one year to the other to balance the book, Mr. Speaker, for the fiscal strain under her leadership.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. As if we didn't need any more evidence, Mr. Speaker, that the government made a big mistake when it cut the film industry and the 2,700 jobs that go with it, we've had presenter after presenter here at Province House today telling their stories, Mr. Speaker, about how their jobs continue to be at risk, how they continue to lose important projects that would add to our economy, Mr. Speaker. One thing they made clear for certain is that they reject the suggestion by the government that they have reached any deal with regards to the changes to the film tax credit. Mr. Speaker, there is no deal. Jobs continue to be at risk. Ask the Premier, in light of the fact that this is still a problem, will he agree now, finally, to extend the arbitrary July 1st deadline to allow for those jobs to be saved?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank Screen Nova Scotia for working with government, Mr. Speaker, to find a help us with a program that worked for them. We laid out a proposal. They said it didn't work for the industry, Mr. Speaker. We went, engaged industry. They came to us. We found out what we believe in and they believe is a compromise, Mr. Speaker, that is common ground for both sides. It's fair to taxpayers. It's fair to the industry. Mr. Speaker, this is exciting. We're now going to be recognizing all Nova Scotia content in the film industry, not just labour. How could anyone in this house be opposed to the fact that we are recognizing all Nova Scotia content? Hotel room, food, clothing, Mr. Speaker, labour. All of the things that Nova Scotians are putting into those films, Mr. Speaker, we will be recognizing that tax credit.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, we may agree it's exciting, but it's exciting for all the wrong reasons as thousands of Nova Scotians continue to try to tell the government here in the House today and outside that they made a big mistake that put their jobs at risk. The Premier may want to thank them, but here is what they are saying, Mr. Speaker. Mary Colin Chisholm, a member of Screen Nova Scotia, was here today and she said it's clear the government, and I quote, doesn't understand the impact of the changes they have made. In fact, she said it's the equivalent of burning every tree in Nova Scotia and then telling forestry to carry on. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier now acknowledge that they made a mistake and extend the deadline until it is fixed so those jobs can be saved?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we're very grateful for Screen Nova Scotia and the cooperation they provided in working with government to help us formulate a policy that they said works well for them. We're encouraged by that. We're encouraged by the fact that now we have a rebate, Mr. Speaker, a program that will be recognizing all the Nova Scotia content that's being used in the productions. That's a good thing for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, and we're encouraged and we're going to continue to work with the industry to make sure that we continue to have a thriving film industry in this province.
Yeah, I'm a leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier may believe all that, but the very people that work in the film industry, they know better, Mr. Speaker. They know they have no deal. They know they still are held back from growing to be all that they can be and bring all the jobs they can bring to our province. They can't even get the answer to a simple question like whether their fund is now capped or not capped. It goes right to the heart of whether they continue to operate in Nova Scotia or not. We're either going to have a first-come, first-served system, or we're going to support projects that bring jobs to the province. So, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Premier, will he assure the film industry today that no good project that comes to the Department of Finance will be turned down that qualifies?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. We're encouraged. We're looking forward to working with Screen Nova Scotia and the industry. We're looking forward to working with those producers. We've told them we continue to have a dialogue as the fund gets rolled out, Mr. Speaker, and we're looking forward to that. We see opportunities. How can we continue to improve and enhance the opportunities for Nova Scotians? And, Mr. Speaker, Screen Nova Scotia is willing to participate in those conversations.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier may be encouraged, but we've heard time and time again from the industry that they are discouraged and actually are forced to look at moving their business somewhere else and the jobs that go with it. Mr. Speaker, Mary Colin Chisholm said today in law amendments that the industry has lost all trust in a government that campaigned on supporting the film tax credit through 2020 and then gutted it as soon as they had a chance, Mr. Speaker. Will the Premier, if he truly wants to solve this, at least apologize to the film industry for promising to do one thing and then doing the opposite in this budget?
The Honourable Premier.
I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind that member and all members of this House, we extended that credit, Mr. Speaker, to 2020, the last session. We now brought in a fund, Mr. Speaker, that we believe will be better for the industry, provide a broader base opportunity for all Nova Scotians, all Nova Scotia companies, and we'll recognize, Mr. Speaker, all of the commitments by Nova Scotia product to those industries. And under the same program, Mr. Speaker, we're seeing Alberta begin to move forward. This, Mr. Speaker, will see our province move forward and recognize all the Nova Scotia spend.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, 6 months ago, the McNeill government announced their plans to open up all home care contracts in the province to competitive bidding, which would include private for-profit providers. Mr. Speaker, this is causing a lot of concern among patients, their families, and healthcare workers. Despite this, government has made no effort to consult with these groups about what could be a very significant change to home care services. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is this. For a government that says it likes to consult on everything, why isn't the McNeill government consulting Nova Scotians about this very important change to home care in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'll ask the Minister of Health to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what I want to convey to the member opposite and to all Nova Scotians is that, yes, there will be likely some change in the delivery of the home care model. We know that it isn't on a sustainable path now. In the budget of 14-15, we put $30 million, and, you know, that got used very, very quickly. We have to follow the advice of the Auditor General in 96, 2002, 2008, to do an RFP. And it's not about privatization. It's about all those who currently deliver, those who, for not-for-profit and profit companies, will be all part of that process. What I can assure as well is that every person currently working in home care will have a job.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Minister of Health for the answer. Home care is certainly a very, very important part of our health care system. And last night, more than 100 people attended a public meeting here in Halifax to talk about their fears and the stress this proposed change is causing them. Government was invited to participate in this session, and five others that have been organized around the province recently, but the government has declined to participate in those sessions. So, Mr. Speaker, I'll ask the Minister of Health, is why hasn't his department agreed to participate in these public sessions around the province so they could hear firsthand from the concerns that people have with respect to the proposed changes in home care?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I can tell the member opposite that members of the department have been at those meetings. I met with home care workers, QP representatives, when I was in Cape Breton this weekend. I've had representation at my constituency office, and also I do have the opportunity, having been invited to make rounds with a few of our home care workers in the Valley, which I will certainly take advantage of.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, my question to you is to the Minister of TIR. 2 weeks ago, I asked the Minister about the remaining budget for the Blue Nose and whether the project would be completed on time and on budget. It's not on time, of course. $617,252 remained to complete the Blue Nose 2. The consultant hired as project managers have already billed the government $1.6 million and continue to charge their hourly rate of $120. So my question is pretty simple. Will the Blue Nose be completed within the budget that remains?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As was identified by the AG's report on the Blue Nose, I think it's very clear about what the expenditures have been on the Blue Nose. Very public information, Mr. Speaker. And if you look at Michael Pickup's report, it really identifies the symptoms of the problem that started way back in 2008 when this project was launched, the rush to get it in to match federal funding to make sure that we associate ourselves with federal funding as opposed to doing it right properly the first time, Mr. Speaker. There were a number of fumbles and things that should have been done better. We get that point, Mr. Speaker. We know what the budget numbers are. We're working very closely with the community and the group that really want to turn the Blue Nose into a positive story. And Mr. Speaker, we're going to get there. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Well, thank you very much. And I got to say, that's the first time that I got an answer from that minister that I don't quite understand, but it was close. It was close. The minister also said that he's looking forward to the spring when the Nova Scotians can get a real good look at the Blue Nose to see what's happening. Well, believe it or not, spring has arrived and Nova Scotians want to know. So the big question is, when will the Blue Nose 2 set sail?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, we've established a very specific process for what has to be done. There's about 18 outstanding issues. A lot of those have to do with certifications for the American Bureau of Shipping and Transport Canada. There's no rushing those things, Mr. Speaker. The community group, the stakeholders, the Lunenburg Shipping Alliance, that the shipbuilders that built this vessel, they're working on these details. We've got a number of different stakeholders who have been involved from the beginning working on that list. When that list is done, and only when that list is done, Mr. Speaker, the boat will be certified and ready for sale. So we understand the pressure. We understand the politics around the Blue Nose. It will be a good story, Mr. Speaker. We all look forward on all sides of the House to the vessel being back in the water so we can share in the majesty of the Blue Nose 2 once again. And Mr. Speaker, we're only going to do that when it's done right, and our department and our government will make sure we follow every step, every recommendation, make sure that things are in place, checks and balances, and we'll get this right, Mr. Speaker. And we all want to see the Blue Nose sail this summer. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. Mr. Speaker, this week is Correction Services Week. We recognize people working in places like Burnside. Issues continue to arise at the Burnside Jail, yet the minister continues to refuse to order an independent review. Last Friday, we learned that an inmate set his cell on fire. That inmate, as well as some staff and other offenders, suffered smoke inhalation. My question, what exactly did this offender use to set his cell on fire, and why did he have that item in his possession?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Appreciate the question. That has been asked a number of times. I am pleased to say that the government has been very proactive in this file with improving safety, staff and offender safety at the facility. We have invested $4 million to renovate and introduce direct supervision at that facility, and $2 million for additional security upgrades, and $150,000 for new protective gear. With respect to the incident that he's speaking about, despite our best efforts, we can contraband always gets in, and in this particular instance, apparently it was a match. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my colleague just asked me how much they spend on matches. Well, Mr. Speaker, in all seriousness, I'm going to table an article that was brought to my attention. If it's true, Some of the activity at the jail is downright revolting. If it is not, it should be refuted by the department. Mr. Speaker, another incident, March 10th, a fight between two cellmates sent one offender to hospital, and he returned to the correctional facility not until April 27th. According to a major incident update, an internal review was to be conducted. And I think the minister had answered that question previously. I know the review that came out was only a page long. Is the minister going to at least complete an internal review, an overall comprehensive review of what has been happening at the jail? We know there's been so many incidents happening over many years now. Will the minister complete a comprehensive, at least internal review? And if she can't share it publicly, perhaps she could at least share it in confidence with the opposition.
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Anytime an incident happens, there is always an internal review. We do have the very most open disclosure policy. We post, whenever it meets the policy, all information on the website. We have new recruitment practices that we initiated in the last year and a half. Staff have been working very diligently to ensure that we have sufficient relief complement, and we are holding stiff competition. So not only are we investing number of millions of dollars that I just said to introduce direct supervision model, which will let us see all of the offenders on a 24/7 basis. We've also introduced video court on a permanent basis effective April 1st, 2015. That, along with our justice partners, that will also decrease the incidence of happening. We've got new recruitment practices, physical fitness, security features, all background checks are done with all our staffs. And in fact, this morning I was very pleased to say that I attended an award ceremony where many of our correctional services officers...
Order, please. Time allotted for the minister's answer has expired. The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Debbie Townsend has been a district community nurse with the VON for 17 years and is deeply concerned about the quality of care for patients in home care if home care services are privatized. Mr. Speaker, when Ontario began a competitive bidding in home care, the Auditor General there commented that this process was inequitable, insufficient, and ineffectively managed, having direct negative consequences on patient care. So I'd like to ask the minister, why is the minister putting patient care at risk by privatizing home care services?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And what I can tell the member opposite and all those who currently deliver home support or nursing care to Nova Scotians. We regard the high quality of their care. We know, however, that there are certainly inefficiencies in the system, well documented by the Auditor General, that we think probably little or no interruption to the system, much like we've done with the restructuring of health, we won't be using the Ontario model. We'll find a Nova Scotia solution, and that's what we will have in place in 2016.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, Debbie is passionate about her patients and also about her role as a frontline worker. She has been supported and encouraged by her employer to advance her education and professional development. However, Debbie is worried about the next generation of home care workers and the amount of support they will receive, Mr. Speaker. When Ontario introduced a similar privatization model, it drove hard-working home care workers out of the industry. And now about 57% of the home care workers leave the Ontario model of home care after just 1 year. So what can the minister say, or can the minister outline how privatization of home care services will attract and retain these much-needed workers, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have the highest regard for those who deliver nursing at home, also the home support workers. We know that, cost and quality can be part of the same coin, and that's what we are working towards as we do make some changes. We have no desire to copy or to emulate the Ontario model. I think we'll have something very different when you consider there are 4 million in Toronto alone to look after.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of TIR. Mr. Speaker, according to a February 4th government press release, the government will post funding provided to Novastar Ferry on its accountability website at the beginning of each month, and I'll table that. The government announced another $2.1 million for the ferry, but the accountability website only includes February and March, while April's transaction is menacing, and I just tabled that. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, can Nova Scotians expect April's and the funding for future months to be posted on the accountability website so that Nova Scotians can easily find exactly how their tax dollars are being spent on the Novastar
ferry? The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Member, for the question. My colleague, the Minister for Municipal Affairs, has the accountability website under his department, so we can follow up with respect to what's posted there. But my understanding was because of the transfer to transportation would be posted on the TIR website. And I do have the chronology of the Yarmouth Ferry in totality. It's posted on our website now. I'll table this for the House's viewing. April 9, 2015, Yarmouth Ferry transferred to TIR. April 30th, Novastar must hit financial projections, which was the topic last week. May 1st, 2015, $2.1 million dispersed to Novastar. So again, I'll table that. It's on the TIR website under quick links.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for the Minister's answer. Mr. Speaker, the Portland Press Herald has reported that Novastar Ferry will leave Charleston, South Carolina, and will arrive in Yarmouth on May 15th before sailing for Portland and inspections by the U.S. Coast Guard. The Press Herald also reported that the ferry will take on a crew of 120 people. Nova Scotia taxpayers have invested tens of millions of dollars into the service, far more than residents of any other jurisdiction. My question, Mr. Speaker, for the Minister is this. Of the 120-person crew of the ferry, how many are Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I've also will reference that article. The article states that Novastar Cruises also plans to buy more of its provisions, such as fuel and food, in Nova Scotia rather than Portland to fulfill a commitment to the provincial government. And Dennis Bailey, spokesman for Novastar, says, quote, "We are committed to buying all of our provisions in Nova Scotia, providing that we can," end quote. The point of that article and the point of this conversation is, with an investment of this importance for the people of Nova Scotia, the economy of our province, we're going to ask and request that every single dollar that be spent in Nova Scotia to circulate in our own economy and support this endeavour from our side of the arrangement is done. So that's something we'll follow up with. Of course, we'll bring that to Governor LePage in June when we travel there to meet with him. Every single part of this service that can be done in Nova Scotia should do so, and that's a point we'll stress from here and all the way through this entire relationship.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, I have a question for the Minister of Health. A few months ago, the Minister of Health wrote in his local column that Nova Scotians need to be responsible for their health. And Mr. Speaker, just about everybody will agree with that principle. If the Minister believes that Nova Scotians should be responsible for their health and wellness, is it true that he cut the RFD budget virtually in half, when we know how important this program is to all the rinks and ball fields, trail groups and others across this province, and how those dollars help to leverage other dollars at the federal level and from other organizations throughout the country?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what I can tell the member opposite is that that was written 17 months ago, actually, not just a few months ago, it was 17 months ago. And I'm pleased that Nova Scotians are responding to do quite a bit more to look after their health. And I realize that government has to be very much part of that process, and having facilities is indeed a big part of that. We know that the 99 projects that were proposed to government, some are in different stages of development. Some don't even have their permits yet. We're actually looking at each and every one of them, and still with a plan to get as many completed in this fiscal year as possible. We're actually doing a review, since there are some that are absolutely ready to go and they need to move forward this year.
I'm a member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, knowing how popular that program is, I am really surprised the government targeted that. But not only that, they've also taken away the Healthy Living Tax Credit. The minister's own words go against his decision to cut funding to these programs. There's groups, Hike Nova Scotia, Recreation Facility Association of Nova Scotia, and Recreation Nova Scotia. They've all written to the minister and to the government expressing their concern. Will the minister reconsider the decision to make these cuts to the RFD program, because they are the very programs that help Nova Scotians improve their health? And ultimately, Mr. Speaker, isn't that what saving money in health care is all about?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I thank the member for that reminder that indeed facilities are a part of improving the health of Nova Scotians. We're going to work within the larger health budget to get as many of those projects completed this year. But by everybody showing a little bit of strength and fiscal health right now, I look forward to the day when our government will be able to make real announcements on what the future can look like to improve health in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Thanks to the McNeill government, post-secondary students attending Cape Breton University will see a tuition increase by more than 20% over the next 4 years. Add to that a new technology fee and a facility renewal fee. Take away the $50 million graduate retention rebate, and what you get is a raw deal for Cape Breton University students, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Minister, how does removing the tuition cap and allowing fees to rise make life more affordable for Cape Breton post-secondary students, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Education, Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to thank the Honourable Member for the question. There is no doubt that any time students hear about a tuition increase, it's difficult for them, and I sympathize with their concerns. However, Mr. Speaker, what I've been clear about over the last number of months is that in short order, a many million dollar gap, up to $50 million, is going to open up between the money that the universities receive and what they need to continue their operations, Mr. Speaker. Like all institutions, Cape Breton University is working to handle that gap, and this is how they've chosen to do it. Thank you.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, a one-time lifting of the cap morphed into a multi-year increase of tuition for Cape Breton University students. The Cape Breton University also says it plans to cut 5 to 10% of its staff and faculty, which means more job loss for Islanders and likely fewer and shorter programs for students. This means more students will have to move away from the island to complete their studies, which also adds to the cost of their education. So I'd like to ask the Minister, why is the McNeill government allowing the cost of post-secondary education in Cape Breton to skyrocket and making it harder for post-secondary students in Cape Breton to get their education close to home and on the island?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I find it quite interesting that the Honourable Member would actually have asked students to absorb an increase of over 20% in one single year, because that's the logical extension of his argument, number one. Number two, remember, Mr. Speaker, $35 million in cuts to universities under that government, under the NDP, Mr. Speaker. This is exactly what happens, Mr. Speaker, when the chickens come home to roost. They cut funding to universities, and now they're saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. Universities don't have enough money. Surprise.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg. Order, please. The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure that my question can live up to the applause, but I'll give it my best shot. My question to you is for the Minister of TIR. As we know, the cleanup for the MV Minor and Skattery Island was supposed to be completed by the end of April, and we also know the deadline has just passed, and there are still portions of the ship and the camp set up on Skattery. So my question to the Minister, could the Minister explain what some of the obstacles the contractor faced which caused the deadline to be missed, and is the minister aware of the final cost of the cleanup?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, I know that the member's been to the Scatteree before. I think he could put together a list of what the challenges have been in the middle of the North Atlantic. It's a tough weather climate. It's a very challenging terrain, Mr. Speaker. I'll quickly say that R.J. McIsaac of Antigonish did a world-class job on this project. Incredible for the challenges that were out there, and I know the member appreciates that. So we're looking at, obviously, the key date for us is the lobster season, which is mid-May, and we're working with the local community and the local fishers who represent the industry to talk about what happens once the vessel is gone. It should be gone from the water. We'll scan the debris field in the next couple weeks to make sure there's nothing left in the water. Then it becomes the logistics of moving by way of barge, equipment, scrap metal, and machinery. So the project is complicated, Mr. Speaker, but we got a world-class organization that will get us there. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Well, thank you very much. I want to thank the Minister for that answer. And he's right when he says that the local community is really concerned about the lobster season, and it's supposed to open up on May 15th to get the best lobsters of anywhere in Nova Scotia. The final phase of the cleanup, which will be involved the use of a barge, is coming fast, and the people are worried. So I guess the biggest question on the minds of a lot of people in the community is pretty simple. Are we going to be given any assurance that the barging of the final materials off the island will not affect the fishing season in Manadou this year?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I can tell the member and all those who live in Manadou, surrounding areas who are impacted by the fishery and the community as a whole as it relates to the environment and the health and safety. From the beginning, we had stated when we put this tender together, when we met with R.J. McIsaac, the number one priority was the fishing season and the fishing industry. So for us, as we get closer to that date, this will be about accommodating the fishery. They will drive the bus in terms of what decisions are made, what corridors and lanes are open to get from the Scatteree to the mainland, Mr. Speaker. At the end of the day, the focus is on the fishery. The other parts of it we'll figure out, but we're not going to impact that industry in one iota. So that's our focus, and we'll keep that commitment to the people of Manadou. Thank you very much.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And when I started this session off asking a question of the Minister of ERDT about internet service in Southwest Nova Scotia, that I get now to ask a question of the new Minister of Business on internet service in Nova Scotia, more specifically in Southwest. We know the people through Woods Harbour area, East Pubnico area into Cape Island have a terrible internet service and are asking for some help. So I was wondering if the Minister has been briefed on this issue and whether he can provide us with some insight.
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I, too, have experienced similar circumstances in my constituency that my colleague has referenced. I've had some discussions in the department around internet service and internet service providers. We're taking steps as we speak to provide some clarity to that file. And at the first opportunity, I will certainly share those outcomes with my colleague and all members of the legislature.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And if I can provide any help on that one, I'd be more than happy to do it. To get you to talk to the people in my constituency and the constituency of Yarmouth, and I also think Queen Shelburne, who are experiencing these problems of connection speeds of less than one megabit per second. They can't do the things that the rest of us can do with internet service. They can't even do remittances. If you're a business trying to do some kind of e-commerce, or you're trying to connect to even the government's own servers to try to remit things. So, I think there's an opportunity here that the minister can be swift in trying to talk to the proponent, which is Eastlink Internet Service, to try to find a better way to provide internet service. So I hope the minister can get through his briefing book and provide some kind of assurance to the people of Southwest Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I can assure my colleague this is topical not only in my new role in the new Department of Business, but one of the more frequent complaints that I receive in my community. So I want to assure my colleague that it is top of the list for me from a constituency perspective, and at the first opportunity, I will share our progress with all of my colleagues in the legislature.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, since being elected, we've heard the McNeill government repeatedly claim to be open and transparent with Nova Scotians. And yesterday, Mr. Speaker, when this government had an opportunity, it used its majority to deny greater accountability for our agencies, boards, and commissions. I want to ask the Premier, Mr. Speaker, if he can tell us how many millions of taxpayers' dollars the CEOs he's appointing to government agencies are responsible for overseeing.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure where the Honourable Member is talking about. I know there's been a bill brought forward by her colleague that is before this House. I believe it's heading towards law amendments. But I'm not sure what the Leader of the New Democratic Party is talking about.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Speaker, I apologize to the Premier. Yesterday, I brought forward a resolution that would see the heads of ABCs when they're hired, the deputy ministers of the various business entities, come before the Human Resource Committee. Mr. Speaker, last year, the Waterfront Development Corporation oversaw more than $30 million in public funds. NSBI managed a portfolio of financial assets last year of $110 million. Mr. Speaker, these are not small sums of money. So now, with this year's budget, the McNeill government has moved the bulk of the responsibility for tourism, venture capital, and economic development to Crown Corporation. So I want the Premier to explain, Mr. Speaker, why he doesn't think adopting greater public accountability for these agencies at the top is in the public interest.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we do believe it's in the public interest, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Member is intentionally, Mr. Speaker, clouding the water. She knows what she's referring to was brought forward. We didn't deny it, Mr. Speaker. We just said we wouldn't pass, give waiver. Is she afraid to have a debate on the conversation? That's what we're talking about, Mr. Speaker. We're not opposed to those agencies. Her colleague sitting next to her has a bill before this House that we are moving through. Hopefully it'll get through law amendments and come back to have another conversation about it. But to suggest, Mr. Speaker, from doing a resolution in this House is absolutely unfair to this place, and it's unfair to Nova Scotians to continue to mislead it the way she was.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River Myra Lewisburg.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And my question through you, Mr. Speaker, is for the Premier. Actually, it's a good question.
Order, please. We'll hear it tomorrow. Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to government business, but before we do that, the Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much. Mr. Speaker, I rise on a point of order. Mr. Speaker, I think it's long been the tradition of this House that to accuse a member of intentionally clouding the issue is inappropriate, Mr. Speaker, and unparliamentary, and as well to say that a member is deliberately misleading the House, Mr. Speaker. I would like you to look into those comments by the Premier and provide us with a ruling, please.
I will take that under advisement and come back to the House. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Speaker, would you please call public bills for second reading?
We'll now call public bills for second reading.